Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is a WEEI special broadcast. It's the 18th annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon, presented by the Arbella Insurance Foundation.
I'm healthy, and it's all thanks to donations that have come from this telethon. I'm here because of a clinical trial that was funded from, basically from the proceeds from this telethon.
Today on Dale and Keefe, Red Sox Jimmy Fund captain Brock Holt.
I've gotten pretty emotionally attached to a lot of these kids and families, and, you know, whenever I go over to the Jimmy Fund, I see them almost every time. They've become a really big part of not only mine, but my wife's life.
Lisa Sherber.
The Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, it just represents hope. And it just represents everyone that walks through those doors feels like they have a home here. And that's what I need to sort of keep doing.
And Bruins defenseman Matt Grizzlick.
Shot by Grizzlick, he scores! Matt Grizzlick has made it 4-1.
Now live from Fenway Park, it's the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon. Here's Dale Arnold and Rich Keefe.
Back here at Fenway Park, it is the 18th annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by the Arbella Insurance Foundation. By the way, the Arbella Tote Board is currently at $338,064. I can't thank you enough for every single gift that's been made, but I've said this for all 18 years. I am greedy, and I'm please begging you to continue to give generously. If you've not yet done so, please call 877-738-1234. If you have given, thank you, but please consider the possibility of giving even more as we continue to try to raise as much as we can for the Jimmy Fund and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. It's not often that we get to bring in big-time NBA reporters.
It's pretty good.
I mean, it's kind of a big...
I'm going to try to get some scoops out of him before he leaves.
Big deal here. Kevin O'Connor joins us. He is an NBA reporter for The Ringer. But frankly, I don't care about him. It's his dad, Paul, who's here as well. Who we, Kevin, let's start with you, the big-time NBA reporter. How did you find out that your dad was ill, and what impact did it have on you?
Well, it was March 15th was the first day that we found out that he had cancer. I was in Los Angeles, home out there, when my mom called, and we found out. It wasn't until the next day we knew, you know, the severity of it. And then later in the month we find out just how serious it actually was, how it spread. It's cholangiocarcinoma, bile duct cancer, and he also has a liver tumor. So, you know, really, like, immediately, as soon as you were diagnosed, I think it was just about, okay, how do we maximize each day? What's the next step more than anything else? So I think almost immediately we sort of just had that mindset.
Now, back in May, you wrote an incredible article about your father, about the relationship you guys have with basketball, the Celtics, just the NBA in general. I'm sure most people have read it, and I dare anybody to read it without getting emotional. It is incredible, but what urged you to want to write about that? I think it touched a lot of people, but not the normal article that you're certainly accustomed to writing.
Yeah, I started writing it sort of as a personal thing, just I was going to like give it to my parents, and then I was like, you know what, maybe I'll give this to my editor at The Ringer, Chris Ryan, who's unbelievable, and I passed it along to him to see if it was something that he thought, you know, we could maybe publish on the website. And you know, I wasn't really sure how people would respond to it at all. In fact, I was sort of worried that it would come off as like, you know, like look at us, like look at me. And that was such an irrational concern, when really it was something that people related to, whether it had to do with a cancer diagnosis or whether it has to do with their relationship with their, you know, their dad or their mom or a sibling, right, over sports, whether it's basketball or something else. So, I don't know, the response to that was unbelievable. Something I definitely didn't expect, but I'm glad we did publish it.
I mean, Paul, Brad Stevens, sorry, Dale. Brad Stevens opened up his press conference that day talking about it. Yeah. I know Marcus Smart has had a lot of good things to say. Just around the league, that had to blow you away, both of you guys, just to see the amount of NBA people reaching out.
Yeah.
He was shocked, especially from Marcus Smart, you know, David signed jersey.
Brought tears to my eyes quite a few times.
Yeah. Well, Paul, let's bring you into the conversation here. And unfortunately, we hear this kind of story a lot. You got sick. Mm-hmm. You had the flu.
Yes.
You didn't think anything of it.
No.
But you couldn't shake it.
No, I couldn't. And I was losing weight and got a little worried and went in for testing. Got blood test one day, and then the next day I got a
CAT scan
done, and it wasn't good. So they sent me right to the hospital. And that was that. I retired a little bit earlier than I wanted to retire, unfortunately. But I'm happy to have the support of my wife, my son, and all the support he's gotten from me over the past few months from people that he's reached out to. It's amazing.
Paul, you must be so proud just of Kevin and where he's come from. Uh-huh. And again, the story really points out where he was. You're the one that sort of, hey, right. Like, you know, get into this. Intern here. Talk to these people.
Yep.
And now, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, one of the best NBA writers in the country.
We appreciate
and
that.
That's, but that's a lot of that is you. A lot of that, I don't think he's going nearly as far if it's not you suggesting things and supporting him all the way.
Yeah, yeah. He's pointed that out a number of times and I think he's done a lot of it himself. He's been writing since he was a little kid. We were looking at his articles the other day when he was 10 years old.
Now, Paul, you started a program called Dunk on Cancer.
Oh, Kevin,
I meant. And all you've done so far is raise $75,000?
Wow. Yeah, sponsors unreal. Unreal. I think that was really... I think when I came home from L.A., I mentioned to you, like, hey, it would be sort of cool to do a fundraiser. Didn't really know exactly what, but it wasn't until after seeing the response to the article where I was like, okay, this has to be something that we do to try to turn a personal negative, you know, for our family into a hopefully a positive experience for a lot of people to rally around. And raising $75,000 with over 1,000 people donating individual donations to it was pretty awesome. The response was pretty unbelievable to that.
Kevin's had a transition from being a Celtics fan into an NBA fan, but that you don't have to, right? You're still a Celtics fan.
I'm still a Celtics fan.
Good. What do you think of Kemba Walker?
Oh, great. He's going to be great.
Kevin, you sign off on that?
Yeah, definitely.
I can't disagree with his daddy.
I think with Kemba, like, it's going to be fascinating to see him now with the best supporting cast that he's ever had in his entire career. Like, the best player Kemba played with before the season was – Al Jefferson.
Or Nick Batum.
I mean, it's kind of sad for Kemba.
was your dad the reason you first loved basketball and the Celtics in particular?
Oh, no doubt about it, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think back to like 98, 99, 2000, then those bad early 2000s Celtics teams after they had that run against the Pacers. But it's like, even through all the bad years, him and I always watching games late at night together. Like, one of my favorite Celtics teams ever was the 06, 07 team before they got Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. Yeah. It was just a fun year to watch all these young guys constantly get better, like Tony Allen and Leon Poe.
To watch bad basketball, is that what you mean?
It's about the experience and the journey more than anything else.
We still had a lot of high fives together.
A lot of high fives, yeah. So, yeah, my dad's the reason why I became a sports fan in the first place, for sure.
Was there anybody that has reached out to you since that story came out that really surprised you?
I mean, I think, like, regardlessly, I think I've just gotten a lot of messages, or sometimes people, like, just... They'll say, hey, you know, and say, your story meant a lot to me. Or they'll share their own story. And that was really the most powerful thing about the response to it, is like everybody offering like thoughts and prayers means a lot, and everybody that donated meant a lot. But the people that were, you know, vulnerable and open, sharing their own stories and how that related to them, that's what really touched me the most. Because I think, you know, regardless of, you know, this event is incredible, but regardless of what it is, it's being open to being vulnerable, being honest, you know, and being genuine with others is something that, for me, I really took away from that. It just felt good to have people do that with me and, you know, and in return, you know, offer that to them. I think it just made a lot of great, strong connections with the conversations that we had.
Paul, it seems like an obvious question, but I ask it a lot of people who come in here and visit with us. Why Dana-Farber for you?
I think they're probably the best around. One of the best in the country. And I'm happy the doctors and nurses were great. And I'm still being treated for chemo, and just very happy with the treatment I've gotten there.
And how often is the treatment now? What's your day to day like?
I go 2 weeks with chemo, and then I take 10 days off, and then I go back for two more weeks. And been feeling pretty good, you know.
Got a really good nurse at home.
Yep.
Right over there. Because it is always a family treatment, isn't it? It's not just you, Paul, or Carol, or Kevin. It's everybody. It's the group.
It's the most emotional support and physical support, and I get it from both of them and all the doctors and nurses, and it's been great. A lot of smiles. Smiles make me happy.
Yeah. We've always been a super close family, but it's like seeing us bond together and grow even closer has been it's a really good feeling.
Is Gordon Hayward back or what? Has he had a good year?
You better hope so. I think today he talked to some of Ben where he's talking about his recovery.
Yeah.
It's like we're still talking about Gordon Hayward getting back.
Well, guys, thank you so much first of all, Kevin, for sharing your dad's story initially. As Rich said, you had a hard time getting through that with a dry eye. But, Paul, thank you for sharing Kevin with us as well.
And thank you, Dale.
Thank you guys for coming in here. It's great to
see you.
Thank
you so much, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Rich.
That is Paul O'Connor and his son, Kevin, NBA reporter for The Ringer. We're going to turn our attention from basketball to hockey. And my buddy Matt Grislick is in the house. Matty, good to see you.
You too. How's it going?
You do know traffic stinks around this town, right?
Yeah, it's brutal.
But you made it in.
Yeah.
And I heard Tuukka was on earlier today, and I heard Greg Hill ask Tuukka the same question I'm going to ask you. How long did it take you to get over it?
I don't think I have gone over it yet, to be honest. I've tried my best not to think about it kind of initially after we were done, but starting to get ready for next season and get back on the ice, it's kind of bringing back memories, obviously, just getting the chance to play in the Stanley Cup. And I think as time's winded down, you've realized how special of a season it was, but still have that sting of not, winning the final game. So it's definitely what's motivating us, just talking to the rest of the guys, coming in next year.
Will you ever watch it?
It's kind of come on. They showed replays a couple times. I'll, kind of convince myself to watch it maybe for, the first minute and then realize, what kind of transpired. So I switch it right away.
Now, some athletes have said they would rather not get to the Cup Finals, Super Bowl, NBA Finals, whatever, and lose. They'd rather get bounced earlier because it doesn't sting as much. Do you feel that way?
I mean, it definitely hurts, more when you do make it all the way and kind of don't finish that game. I got a taste of that in college, making it to the national championship, playing in the Garden for, the hometown team, kind of same thing, so... I don't know if I agree with it. It's still really cool.
You still had a successful season overall, right? But it's
I mean, playing in the Stanley Cup is obviously a dream come true, and that's, what you dream of. So I think you get, you gain a lot of good experience making it that far and playing on that stage. So kind of gives you a little bit of confidence going into next season.
Was it a physically challenging season for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think, there were quite a lot of injuries this year. And was able to stay relatively healthy, at least in the beginning half. So probably got a little bit more opportunity than maybe I'd anticipated. And
but you made the most of it when you got it.
Yeah, I welcome that. Obviously, that's what any player wants is more opportunity and a chance to prove themselves. So definitely thankful for the coaching staff and management to trust in me to be able to take on those minutes. And I think I gained a lot of experience and just kind of having the confidence to, knowing you can play against some players you normally wouldn't on the first and second lines, things like that. So that was all good for sure.
How are you feeling now? I mean, obviously you and most of your teammates are dealing with injuries throughout the whole playoff run, and then that extends your offseason or shortens your offseason, I should say. How are you feeling right now?
I feel really good. I took some time off just kind of making sure, my head was okay, obviously, after the finals. So it's obviously really kind of tough getting going again the first few weeks. But I've been in the gym for quite a while now and back on the ice. So starting to feel like myself and starting to get a little anxious for camp.
People who don't know the story, Matt grew up literally in the shadow of the Gardens. He could see the Garden from where he lives. His dad, John, is on the Bull Gang at the Gardens, and you got to skate on that ice a lot over the course of your life. It must have been surreal for you to put that jersey on the first time.
Yeah, it really was. The draft was obviously really cool. I had no idea. I remember just kind of blacking out and not even going into the... I was just hoping to get drafted, really, and to have you go to your hometown team and getting to play college so close was pretty cool. But just getting to throw the jersey on for that first game definitely brought back a lot of memories. And you try your best to eliminate distractions, obviously, and not think about it too much. But, you know, it's pretty cool, especially, you know, going through the playoff run like we had. You know, getting to have family and friends come out and support, and just seeing the whole city obviously turn for hockey. And it's been pretty cool, obviously, you know, having the Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics have so much success, and to be able to add to that and be part of the team is certainly a dream come true.
Does it add more pressure to you? I mean, obviously you didn't go too far for college, but then now you're playing pros right here in your backyard. Is there more pressure because friends and family are seeing every single game, yeah, whereas, you know, if you were playing in Arizona, maybe not the case?
I mean, you know, some people talk about how maybe it can be a bad experience having so many people around, ticket requests, things like right. that, but I'm just really, you know, thankful to be on the stage and make it in the NHL. That was goal number one, obviously, for me coming out of college and kind of having to fight for that. You know, playing in the AHL for my first year and at the beginning of my second year, too. So I try my best not to wander, let my mind wander about, you know, distractions like that. And my family does a great job of handling all that for me. So they make it pretty easy on me just to go out there and play.
Speaking of local kids playing here, rumor has it your summer roommate's Ryan Donato.
Yeah.
So he's back home, obviously. Right. He got traded to Minnesota in the Charlie Coyle deal.
Yep.
But you guys got to spend most of the summer together.
Yeah, it worked out. I live with Dan Hine in the summer, and he gets to go back to Vancouver. So Ryan was looking for a place to live, and, you know, it's been nice to have him around. Obviously, he's back to training in Boston, and he's getting ready for a big year, obviously, going back out to Minnesota. So, you know, we've been kind of lucky to have quite a lot of guys around the same age coming through the system, through the Bruins in Providence. So,
did you tell him you like Charlie Coyle better?
Yeah. I had to break it to him. No. It was pretty cool, obviously. Weird situation for the both of them. Charlie getting to come back home. I think it's worked out really well for both involved. So, yeah, it was obviously tough to kind of see a friend go, but at the same time, it's been pretty cool for Charlie to see the amount of support that he has and his friends and family's coming to the game. So, and obviously, it was unbelievable for us in the playoffs as well. So, certainly a welcome addition.
What's it like playing with Zdeno Chara, a guy who was in the league probably when you were in preschool or whatever it is? Just, I mean, your whole NHL experience as a fan, Zdeno Chara has been a part of it, and now he's on your team, and it doesn't really seem like there's any sign of him stopping.
No, I mean, I'm really awestruck by him, obviously. Just to see, you know, the age he's getting to, but how he takes care of his body, and he still plays big minutes, and he plays them really well, too, and it's pretty inspiring just to see, you know, his journey. Obviously, like you said, it's really weird watching him as a fan on TV, and now he's two stalls away from me. We were getting dressed to go out to a game together, so no, but he's been really good to me, and he's very vocal, you know, especially as a young guy. I lean on him throughout the game, and try to emulate a lot of things that he does just to get ready for games and take care of your body.
There's a 42-year-old quarterback who's pretty good, who plays 25 miles away. It's hard for fans to understand what your veteran defenseman does, like at the conditioning test and the testing at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, like that's the thing. He's not just like 42 years old and kind of going through the motions. He's leading, you know, all the pull-ups, and everyone knows that. And he's taking care of himself, and he's in ridiculous shape every single year. So he certainly leads by example for the whole team, and he sets the precedent. So we're very fortunate to have him as our leader.
Do you keep up with all the off-season rumors, whether it's trade rumors or who's a free agent, you know, who's a restricted free agent? Do you keep up with that, or is it just I'll show up and do my job?
I mean, you definitely hear chatter for sure. It's inevitable. I think there's just a lot of not really sure what's going on. It's kind of seemed like there's a lot of guys who are still unsigned kind of going into camp, but
like two on your team.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that as a player, it's out of your control. So you're just trying to, especially with the shortened summer, you're just trying to make sure you show up in as best shape as you can and relatively healthy. So I'm sure those things will get settled out with the team, and we'll be really excited to have those guys back because they're a huge part of our team.
I know how important family is to you, and I have to admit, when I saw the video of the first father's trip that your dad got to go on,
yeah.
A guy who has toiled in that building for years and years and years, and now he's a dad, and yeah. He's out watching his son play on the road. That was a very cool thing.
Yeah, that was so cool. We've kind of talked about it back and forth, but it was also one of my first games getting called up for the season, so a lot was kind of happening, but looking back, that was probably one of the coolest experiences to see him kind of get to relax and enjoy himself. And we started in Philadelphia, we got to go to a great city in Nashville, had a couple days off, so just to see him with a huge smile on his face enjoying himself was...
And your sweater on.
Yeah, exactly. That was weird, but yeah, it's kind of funny just to see your name in the back of a jersey, and he takes a lot of pride in that.
Well, I know that, as I said, a local guy, you know as well as anybody around here about the Jimmy Fund and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. The Bruins are very active in hospital visits and visiting with kids. You probably as well versed as anybody in how important the Jimmy Fund is to the people. Community.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, everyone knows about it and the impact that it has in the city, and it's huge. You know, that the team, you know, likes to get involved with it as much as they can, and I know as players getting to go on those hospital visits and talk to the kids and just to meet with them in person and kind of build that connection and see how much it brightens their day, kind of brightens your day as well. So at the same time you're giving back, you're also, I feel like they're giving to you at the same time. So it's a really cool experience, and you know, it's meant a lot to the city of Boston.
Good to see you again. I'll see you on the ice soon.
Sounds good.
A little sooner maybe than we're ready for, but you'll be back on the ice soon.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Matt.
Thank you.
Bruins defenseman Matt Grizzlick joining us. We're live from Fenway Park. This is the WEINS and Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by the Arbella Insurance Foundation.
Hi, this is Andrew Bogarts. Every dollar goes to cancer care and research at the Jimmy Fund and Dana-Farber. You can pitch in today with a $10 gift by texting KCANCER to 20222.
We don't need to hear the tape of Xander Bogaerts. We can talk to Xander Bogaerts, who joins us in studio right now. Good to see you.
Hi, guys. Thank you. Good seeing you guys.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Obviously, you can be better, but yeah, so far it's been good.
I wanted to talk to you about something your manager said to me, Alex Cora, a week or two ago. He said, you watch the clubhouse, you look in the clubhouse, this is Xander Bogaerts' team.
he said it to you. I wouldn't say that exactly. Obviously, we have so many guys in here that I think a lot of us look up to, and guys that make sure this clubhouse is intact and everyone's doing this stuff the right way, so... I mean, I'm very appreciative of him thinking that way. I'm flattered.
Now, this past off season, you got that extension done. So you got that all taken care of. You didn't have to worry about it. You didn't play out this year and go to free agency. Was that something that was really important to you? Was that the Red Sox that approached you? How did that all work out?
I think it was important to me. As I said, I've been always saying this is pretty much all that I know. I signed there when I was a 16-year-old, me and my brother, and coming up to the system, meeting all the guys, all the different coaches that I've been a part with, and a lot of them are still on the team or with the organization. And I think the success that we had in the big leagues with this team that we've been having for these last couple of years, I think that definitely played a big factor in it. And obviously, you see the potential that the team has for the future, and you obviously want to be a big part of that.
I said to Mitch Moreland the other day, I said, I'm running out of things to say about Rafael Devers.
Yeah.
And I'm, by the way, he gives you a lot of the credit for what he's doing this year. He's been kind of a project for you all year long. Has he even surprised you?
He has. He has surprised me, honestly. I remember when he was in the minor leagues, a lot of people would talk about it. I never seen him in person or I never played with him in the minors, but you always hear about him. And once he got to the big leagues his first year, he played so good. Last year, obviously, he had a lot of ups and downs. He was hurt a couple of times, so it was just a very inconsistent season for him, I would say. In the playoffs, he did great. But I think all the work that he did in the offseason, that's the only thing I just try to remind him. It's similar to me my first year when I went to Arizona. after a rough 2014, I went to Arizona in that offseason, and I had a good year the next year. It's similar to him, I feel like. All the work that he did in the offseason this year, hiring a special trainer, all this and that, and the first couple games, I think it was like the first 30 games, I didn't think he had a homer or anything like that. And
right.
I was just keep reminding him that, hey, all the hard work you did in the offseason, it will pay off in the end. Obviously, I didn't think it would have been like this, but I think we'll all take that. But I did believe that all the work that he did in the offseason would have paid off for him and obviously his family and the team. It would have just been a good season for him, and man, it's been a phenomenal season for him.
Now, is that something you and he take a lot of pride in? Because you hear a lot of, you know, baseball analysts saying, oh, who's the best outfield or who's the best pitching staff? But the left side of the infield, there's not a shortstop third base combo in all of baseball like this. Is that something that you guys are kind of aware of and take pride in?
I think coming into the season, we maybe didn't think of it that way. But as the season goes on, the more games you play and the more talk you hear about all of those stuff, I think the one thing that me and him has done very, very well as of late is understanding that, appreciating that, and trying to continue that, you know. And as I said, in the beginning of the season, we didn't want to be a good left side of the infield duo.
Right,
you know, it's not something you think about. You want to be a part of the team and help the team. But I think as the year evolved, we just grabbed it and ran off with it, you know. And I think that's something that we both did very, very well in understanding that.
If you ask pitchers and some observers of the game, we might think that there's something going on with the baseball this year. I might think that, but even if I do think that, Rafael Devers hits balls that he hits so hard.
Yeah. Hey, it's no balls. That,
it's not about that.
For him.
Right.
Nah. I think maybe the other guys, maybe like me and whoever else. But for him, I it's just the way he hits it so hard, man. It's kind of like JD last year. I was hitting behind him a lot. I was hitting fifth. He was in fourth. So I kind of hear the sound off the bat very differently from JD pretty much the whole year last year. And this year, since I've been in the third spot and Devers has been in the second spot, I've been hearing it off of Devers. And it's actually been a bit louder, but it's just so similar to JD's last year. You know, I'm not hitting behind JD lately, so I don't know how it is with him. But Devers just hit the ball so hard. And sometimes he takes these hard swings, and I'm like, I don't know if my back can hold that. If I swing like that. But it's been impressive the way he's been doing it.
Now, has there been frustration with you guys knowing that the offense is so good? Yeah. You know, you and Rafael are having career years. Mookie Betts is certainly no slouch. And, you know, on down the lineup, there's been some really – you guys are scoring a million runs, and yet out of a playoff spot. How do you not let the frustration take over?
I mean, obviously, it's a bit tough. It's a bit tough, but we know the type of offense we had, you know. And the other day, we were down 6-0 against the Orioles, and I think we were in the third inning, and Alex and the guy and the coaches were like, hey, let's go. You know, we're the best offense in the big league, so let's step it up. And then we stepped it up. Sam Travis hit a homer, and then Devers RBI and this and that. And easily, we start chipping away, and then we ended up winning the game. But hopefully, it doesn't go like that every night.
Right.
The other night, we had a good performance by Rick, so... Mm-hmm. Some games like that would definitely help out the offense a bit, and on the nights that we explode, it's going to be an our advantage, I guess.
The good news is you're the best 0-2 hitter in baseball.
Oh, man.
The bad news is you get an awful lot of 0-2 counts,
don't you? Hey. I know, man.
That's where he's comfortable.
The other day, we were facing someone, and this guy threw me two, I think it might have been Clevinger, and he threw me two balls painted down away, and I'm asking myself, like, why does this have to happen to me? You know, maybe I take the first one, but it's not in my instinct to automatically take the second one, but I'm like, why are these guys just like, it's like that easy to get me to 0-2, and then I got to keep fighting back, but... I think just being in that situation of being in 0-2 a lot, I just kind of understand that if the pitcher throws me a ball, it just gives you a little more confidence, you know, and you got to battle, and it's frustrating at times, but that's just the way it has been.
Now, it's been tough, you know, watching Chris Sale go from a year ago or last couple of years, you know, a Cy Young candidate all up until the end of the season, and then he's dealt with different injuries. This year, yet another injury for Sale. Also, not as dominant a season that he had a year ago as far as wins and losses are concerned. How do you guys feel in the clubhouse about him? What kind of confidence do you have in Sale? Obviously dealing with this latest injury, although not Tommy John, so I guess some positive.
Oh, that's actually great news. I think just his name is what fears you whenever you're an opponent or you're hitting in the box. I remember my first couple of years facing Felix Hernandez. That, to me, was some... pretty big. And then as the years kept going on, he wasn't as good of the pitcher that he used to be, but there's still his name. You're facing Felix Hernandez tonight. It's like a little bit of like, whoa. And I think that's what the guys have with Chris Sale, you know, the opponent team. So his name, he doesn't have to have the nasty stuff that he always has, but it's just been unfortunate that he's been dealing with injuries these last couple of years. And I mean, whenever he's healthy and at his best, he's obviously one of the best pitchers in the game.
All right, when you first came up, it was Felix Hernandez.
Wow, man.
Who's that pitcher who puts that thought in your mind now? Is there one?
I think he's the guy who puts it in the pitcher, exactly. Is what I'm thinking.
I always said it. It's been training. I got asked who might be the pitcher that you fear the most or something like that. I said Jeff Samardzija.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Also the best football player.
I said Jeff Samardzija. I haven't faced him in a while. I faced him a lot when he was with the White Sox.
Yeah.
When he's been with the Giants now, I haven't seen him as much. So they're coming here soon. Hopefully I don't got to face him.
And no offense to Jeff Samardzija, good pitcher. I don't think that's anybody's answer.
I really don't.
Hey. I mean, out of all the guys in the league.
I know. Hey, Jeff Samardzija, man. He's man, the way he throws and he just looks at you like, you know, he doesn't fear anything. It's just someone have different guys, you know.
Yeah.
I have Jeff Samardzija.
What's it like in the clubhouse right now, knowing that you still have a month and a half left to try to gain as much ground as possible, six games out of that wild card spot? What's the confidence level?
For me personally, I mean, looking up at the scoreboard a lot. Yesterday, I mean, I was watching the Tampa game. I saw they lost, so that was nice. It's a bad situation to be in, chasing a couple of good teams, and some of the teams we're not going to play no more, like the Indians, the Oakland. We're not going to play these guys no more, so Tampa, that's the only thing we can control because we're going to play them four times, I think, in the Trop the next month. We just got to win as much games as possible now until we get to that point and see where we're at. But those are the games that's going to be so important for us.
Last hour, we talked to Brock Holt, who's the Red Sox team captain for the Jimmy Fund.
Okay.
I've seen you with the kids as well. I've seen you with the kids at spring training and when they're here visiting at Fenway Park. What does it mean to you to be able to bring a smile to a youngster's face?
I know. Especially this year, they've come a couple times into the dugout. As players, you know, we tend to focus on the game and the results as a team-wise, but understanding that a little chatter with them or a little some type of advice to them can mean the world, and that's something that they will remember maybe for months, years, or even the rest of their lives. So I think it's really important to understand how important we make them feel, and obviously we want to help them out as much as possible.
Now, you talked about how you've been in the organization since you were 16. It must have been pretty quick that you realized just what the connection was between the Jimmy Fund Clinic and the Red Sox.
It was quick, especially once you start getting to the higher levels, maybe AA, AAA, we start visiting the hospitals more. Come in a rookie program, and you do some stuff with the kids. So it's the more high you get to the big leagues, the more involvement you get into that, and it's fun to be a part of it from young instead of once you get to the big leagues.
Will you take a glance at Bryce Harper's BP today?
Oh man, he's here, huh? sure. You know, yeah. I played against him not a lot, a few times, and I remember the last thing I remember was him hitting a ball for Joe Kelly pretty far. So,
he hits a ball pretty far off everybody.
Yeah, I will still take Devers hitting it further, though.
Yeah. Well, it's great to visit with you. Thank you so much for lending your voice and your experience to this
whole thing. Thank
you, guys. And best of luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
Xander Bogaerts joining us live from Fenway Park. This is the WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon presented by the Arbella Insurance Foundation.
Please help us support the inspiring, strong, and brave patients at the Jimmy Fund.
Every single dollar that comes in here, it will go to the right place. And all of those individual dollars combined will help people like Mason, you know, get through what is, I can promise you, is the toughest thing that you will endure.
Dial 877-738-1234 to make a gift. Now back to Dale and Keith on the 18th annual WEEI Nesson Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon.
Hey, I want to let you guys know that all gifts up to $7,500 are being matched between now and the end of the show, thanks to the Germani family from Barnstable, Massachusetts, and our sincere thanks to them. Okay, this is Dale's geek out moment.
Here we go.
This is my geek out moment for the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon. Not only do I get to talk to a former NASA mission controller, But David Reed was part of the team that sent Neil Armstrong to the moon. He was part of the team that helped get Apollo 13 back safely. And he earned the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his efforts in getting Apollo 13 home. David Reed is with us. It is an honor, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It is a remarkable career you've had and a remarkable story, and now you've got a different battle that you've got to face.
Yeah, I sure do. This has been a great one, though. I mean, you look at Apollo, it was a great challenge. This is a great challenge. And we had great people to do Apollo. Got great people that got me where I am here today.
How did you get into NASA? How did that all begin?
Dumb luck, really. I graduated from college, and I had told my roommate, look, the only thing I want to do is go fly rockets for NASA. And a guy called, and he said, he introduced himself from NASA, said he wanted to talk to me about a job. And when I finished the interview, I said to him logically, let me think about it. And my roommate went ballistic. He says, what were you doing? Yeah. Well, it turns out the guy wanted me to go work in thermodynamics. 2 days later, I get another phone call. I figured it was the same guy. You don't want to, you've made up your mind yet. And he said, I'd like to talk to you about a job. And I said, I'll take it.
Different guy?
He said, different guy.
You're a hot commodity.
He said, wouldn't you like to hear about the job? I said, well, sure. And who did I end up working for? Chris Kraft. I worked in mission control. Just dumb luck on that call. But I was in the front row at the 50-yard line. I was in the front row they called the trench. And we were the people who did trajectory work. We determined where they were and what maneuvers to make. That's what we did.
Dr. Vincent Ho is here with us as well, the clinical director in the stem cell transplant program. I don't know how often you get to work with people as smart as this, doctor.
Never. David is such a smart guy. And you know, every time we talk about clinical trial or new medications, he would come to me already having done all his research. So all I have to do is just convince him that it's the right thing to do.
David, you were diagnosed back in June 2014. How did you know something was up? What were those early days like?
Well, the earlier days I had myelodysplastic syndrome, which is a precursor for 30% of the people. And I think I caught my oncologist then. It was Martha Wadley at the time. And she came back in the office, and she said, I got bad news. I said, what's that? She says, you got leukemia. I said, you know, that's the best news you could have given me. You guys can cure leukemia. It's that MDS stuff that was driving me nuts. And you know, from that day on, I even liked the hospital food, so they said, there's something wrong with this guy. But it was, people have asked me, how was that experience? And I have to tell you that it was pleasant. I don't know how else to describe it. I was in there for 3 months, dripped up, 24 hours a day, and with a family. I mean, to this day, I still stay in touch with some of the nurses. And it really is. It's more like family. It just took care of you. I didn't feel that I was in trouble at all, ever. Just waited out.
Was the family feeling similar when you were trying to get Neil Armstrong to the moon? Was that the sort of family feeling?
Definitely. We were close. And in fact, I stayed very close to Neil, even up to his demise. You know, he and I were, of all the astronauts, he and I would communicate back and forth. We'd email, and we'd talk about different presentations and different things going on. Great guy.
Doctor, what has he been like as a patient?
Well, I have to say it's been a real pleasure taking care of David all these years, you know, him along with his wife, Florence. Just incredible people. He's so energetic, so upbeat. You know, I have to say, you know, if this were happened like 15 years ago, he wouldn't be here. No. Because, you know, in his age group, we were not transplanting patients in his age group, you know, just 15, 20 years ago. And now we're curing patients, you know, like David,
right,
with stem cell transplantation, because we've made so much progress with our research and, you know, with our new medications for treating infections, for preventing any complications of transplant. So we're managing not just to cure the patients, but also to help improve their quality of life after they've been cured. As you can see, you know, David has some side effects from the transplant, something called graft versus host disease that he's still fighting, you know, even 5-6 years later.
We'll beat that.
But, you know, that he's currently,
yeah, okay.
And he's currently participating on a clinical trial to try to treat, you know, these issues to help him with his quality of life and with his vision and muscle strength.
So what is that treatment like, the one that you're on now?
It's nothing nothing severe at all. Right now it's just a trial drug, which is taken orally, no injections or anything. And it's too soon to tell. I've only been on it for 3 months. It's going to take a good year of this to find out in the trial what the effect is and how quickly you can see responses. But I totally look forward to getting out of that that syndrome. I have a little loss of lung capacity, and I've told my wife, I said, Florence, look at this. In 2 years of this drug, I'll be my old self. And then she has to remind me, she says, yeah, and you'll be 80 years old. So you can't get out of it. But back to Dr. Ho's point, when I first got there, yes, I'd read the literature. I knew that, you know, they're not going to transplant you much beyond 72, 73. And so it's a catch-22. Either this MDS rolls over and becomes leukemia, or it does so too late for you to be transplanted. So you're sitting there on this edge. And that's why I told Martha, I said, make my day, you know. But I'd been in good shape. I've been working out all the time. And I remember Dr. Ho telling me, he said, well, if you stay in good shape, he said, I'll transplant you up to about 75. So I had some more time. And it happened. And I don't know, guys, if it ever happens to you, you got the right place to go, because they were so... I remember the girls used to wake me up about every 4 hours. Why? Do you feel nauseous? If I did, they would take care of every step. You know, would take care of that. I never got sick. I mean, it was just, I couldn't say it's a breeze, but it was pleasant. You got to go that way.
Well, today we talked to a Navy submariner and a NASA mission controller. This has been a heck of a day for me. David, it's an honor to meet you. Thank you so much for taking the time. Dr. Ho, thank you for coming in here as well and lending your expertise and keeping people like this going. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Good to see you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap up our portion of the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon. We are going to make way for OMF. They're coming through the door here in just a couple of minutes. I can't tell you how quickly these 4 hours go by every time. And we'll be back here tomorrow, but please don't go anywhere. In fact, continue to make the phones ring at 877-738-1234. 877-738-1234. You guys are making a difference, and I can't thank you enough. We're broadcasting live from Fenway Park. This is the WEEINS and Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon, presented by the Arbella Insurance Foundation.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.